I'm Brendan McGee, and you're listening to Revisitation, a creative nonfiction program exploring the relationship between motion and self-discovery. On June 19th, 2013, David Hashey made national headlines washing ashore near Majorville, New Brunswick, after a days-long river cruise on a dock he'd stolen from the Fredericton Rowing Club. Over the last several years, I've interviewed a dozen people trying to make sense of this local news sensation, all while searching for the man himself. Every song you'll hear is tied to our story's setting, the Wolastoq River, often called by its settler name, the St. John. You'll find more information about the podcast, as well as links to stream and purchase these songs at revisitationpodcast.wordpress.com. Friday, March 20th, 2020, Halifax. For a moment so replete with time, those late afternoon hours disappeared daily. It was a mystery with some currency for us shut-ins. Though the work ahead, as I knew it, was paused, Hermitage somehow drove the depths of my curiosity further. As darkness loomed nearby each day, we hurried outdoors after finishing our work to collect whatever scraps of daylight were afforded. I felt the river's current in my thoughts, finding parallels of those memories of David Hashey on a walk where Quinpool Road bends toward the Rotary. On a small strip of earth jutting out into the Atlantic, landlocked, yet still named Horseshoe Island Park, I discovered a flagpole, a modest trail, and, God help me, a heaping pile of piecemeal dock sections. They seem to form a large wharf adjacent to the nearby St. Mary's Boat Club. As we wandered the bone-straight kilometer-long path, my eyes scarcely strayed from that pile. I made my way back to Horseshoe Island at 8:15 that night, alone, as the hour bled faint remnants of blue from the sky. Within that scarcity of streetlights, whatever shadows scattered there only became visible in the low beams of cars whooshing through the heavy night air. Their movements bred a sort of creature fear that drove me across to the still side of the road and a bench so immediately opposite the dock pile that it seemed placed there, specifically for my benefit. I sat a while, shivering in the early spring as my thoughts drifted down water. If this really was all just a metaphor, what would the harm be in making off with a piece of dock, floating freely for weeks, maybe months before anyone noticed? Myself in a period of forced isolation, had Mr. Hashey really had the right idea all along? Deriving peace from solitude, set to the natural beauty we so often live in spite of. Revisitation will return after this.
As it is, the sky opens its eyes, indigo blue, and you hear a loon cry. My paddle is still, there's no time here to kill. Fishing is good when the Great Spirit wills. The water's like glass, but that too shall pass, like my salvation when I go to Mass. Now when I look down the great Wolastoq, I see the trees falling, I see what they took. Who can own this land, carve their name in a tree? Who could own Wolastoq, run to the sea? Cattail angels dance, slow in a trance, like us long ago when we still had a chance. Now dreamwalkers wake to a world that seems fake, where they grind into dust the magic we make. I build birch bark canoes, trap a rabbit or two, steal wood for the fire, now that's what I do. But there were days, I don't care what you say, when what we had wasn't taken away. Who can own this land, carve their name in a tree? Who could own what I stood, run to the sea? This land from our grandchildren's hands, a trust so sacred makes these demands. The water will flow forever and slow, when we are gone, Wollastook will know.
That's Brent Mason with Wollastook, which hails from his album, River Songs. After leaving New Brunswick to study on the West Coast in the late 80s, Mason returned home in 1992. At that time, he began to notice the natural beauty of his surroundings, and more specifically, the Wollastook River for the first time. Just before things shut down in March of 2020, I picked up the phone to ask Brent about River Songs and how it might tie in to our story.
I saw the river for the first time in a lot of ways and was blown away by the beauty of it. And, you know, not just on it, but traveling by it and taking road trips up to Hampstead and Gagetown. That stretch of river to Gagetown from St. John remains one of my favorites. So I felt really this is the truth that after a few years of putting a few records out and spending more and more time on the river and starting to raise kids and having a piece of land by the river, I really felt compelled to give back to it.
Across 16 weeks between 1999 and 2000, Mason researched and wrote 11 songs inspired by the river, using interviews, road trips, and both primary and source documents to create an album called River Songs.
I researched and wrote a song a week, using my history degree from UNB for the first time, really, you know. And so I interviews and road trips and reading through, you know, source documents and primary documents and put this record together. And it really was very, very much a love letter to the river and my own little way to kind of make an appreciation of it more available sonically, you know, to people.
Now, do you think part of the appeal in the public's reception to that was maybe the idea that the natural beauty in New Brunswick is maybe underserved in our settler culture?
I don't know. I can only really speak to my own feeling about it, you know, was having come back here. It's not an uncommon thing. You go away, you come back and see where you were with new eyes, and that was the case for me, and I just wanted to contribute something.
Throughout this series, you've heard Sam Arnold's beautiful composition, Wollastook Fantasia, which he painstakingly researched and performed with the New Brunswick Youth Orchestra. I called Sam as well, with thanks to his son and my friend, Eben, for connecting us. I'm wondering, generally speaking, what inspired you to create your piece, Wollastic Fantasia?
It was a number of reasons. First of all, I'm an immigrant. My wife and I came to New Brunswick in 1975 after visiting my brother, who had moved here, actually was in Knowlesville. And having lived in northeastern U.S., we were struck by the incredible beauty of the area. But I noticed when I arrived here, I was also became concerned about clear-cutting. That's for one of the first things I noticed, how many of the forests were being clear-cut and spruce budworm spraying and things like that. And those kind of things bothered me. And so I had a sort of a love relationship with the province, but I was also concerned about how is it being managed. But I did immediately fell in love with the river. The other reason that I became interested was when we first lived in St. John, we were moved in an apartment on Douglas Avenue, and that overlooked the river. And our landlord was Donald F. Taylor. And we soon learned that he was the last living steamboat captain who had carried passengers and cargo up and down the river for 200 years or more. Captain Taylor was keen to show me and tell me more than I could possibly absorb at the time. But the impression he made stayed with me.
I wanted to ask something along the lines of, if it could speak, what stories would it tell? But I think instead, maybe a little bit less trite of a thing to say would be, what tone of voice do you think the river would be, if it could talk?
Well, the tone is the last song on the record, Brent. It is called Words from the Water. It's the river's voice. You know, that's exactly why I wrote that. What to start with, you see me in a thousand dreams, northern Maine, a land of dreams, you know, so it's first person in the river's voice, not to be trite, but that was very much a conscious kind of effort to not be me talking, but to maybe try and have the river speak. But how would it, you know, in vernacular kind of prose terms, it would probably say, can you stop with the cigar boats? Can you stop with the pesticides? Can you stop with the variances that are given to every dick that can afford to put a, you know, an extremely ugly house on my bank? Can you love me a bit? It might say that.
Is it fair to say that maybe the things that it would be saying haven't changed so much as maybe the tone is a little bit less forgiving 20 years on?
Possibly, yeah, because we keep saying we're going to do this and do that and do this and do that, and we keep not doing it, you know, and that applies to this river system as well. We don't honor it or respect it or care for it the way it needs to be looked after if we're going to continue to reap the benefits of its magnificence, you know, its beauty and its centrality to who we are. I think geography has a massive effect on humans and culture, and it may be the most important thing in a lot of ways. I think naming it, renaming it, taking it back to the name that it originally had with the First Nations is probably a really good way to maybe spearhead a rethought of what this thing is and what we're all about, what we're doing with it. You know, it's not the St. John River, for Christ's sake. That's a lame name anyway, you know. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't flow, as it were, like a river should.
Can you talk a bit about using the river's traditional name, the Wollastic, rather than the settler St. John name?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was easy. I feel that the Wollastock is the correct name. It is the beautiful river that's providing life and beauty. And so that was the name of the river, and then I objected to the fact that we came along and renamed the river. So I think it should revert back to the traditional name.
Certainly our chat is zooming out a little bit from one of the more specific narratives that I'm talking about, which is Mr. David Hashey and his adventure from Fredericton on the way to St. John. I wanted to ask, a very general question about maybe what you can learn about yourself spending time on the Wollastic, and maybe if you might hazard a guess as to what being out there meant to someone who, you know, was that, I don't want to say old worldly, but who had a purpose for that river that river really hasn't been used for in so many eras.
Yeah, I think there are universal kind of truths and connections that exist that if you can allow yourself the opportunity to access them, they come. And I think peace of mind and you know, a sense of wonder and a sense of connectedness are all probably byproducts of spending time in nature and just getting out along it, kayaking or just sitting on the edge and, you know, watching fish jump and watching the sunset, or, you know, going out on a raft, you know, whatever gets you near the water. Yeah, I think it's just that, you know, getting out, shutting the hell up and letting the river do its thing is always going to be something that has a positive benefit for your head and your heart, you know.
I don't know how much I learned about myself, but what it has confirmed that in my preparation, my planning and the research for the composition, that my determination and my confidence in what I was doing overcame any doubts and hesitations in my mind. This was by far the most challenging project of my life, and it was entirely my own idea.
Of course, you had different modes of transport, different purposes for your adventures, but the confidence that you mentioned and the feeling of satisfaction at completion of that adventure, certainly there's some parallels there. I'm wondering if you'd hazard a guess at what being out there on the water meant to someone like Mr. Hashi.
Yeah. In a way, it was. I borrowed somebody's kayak because I couldn't use my two-seater kayak, so I wanted to get a single kayak from Gagetown to Oak Point. And it was exciting because the first day was quite breezy and windy, and I had to deal with some quite difficult paddling. In fact, I had to paddle so hard, the backrest broke. And then I had to figure out a way to continue. So there was some definite challenges. And then by contrast, the next day, the river was completely calm. And it was just amazing. You know, it was just so beautiful. It was so glassy. And all the clouds were so interesting to watch. So it was really very, very inspiring to be on the river pretty much by myself. But I would much prefer to do it that way than floating on some kind of a dock.
Certainly, yeah.
I planned a dream inside a dream with your uncle, a fisherman who died. The oracle of the Maritimes. Too cloudy to see fireworks, we would ride a chest of drawers into the waves. His granite hand held mine. I asked him how to tell you how much I could love you, 'cause I've never been so sure of anything. Sometimes I feel so beautiful, it's strange for a tomboy. Bruises upper legs, big and holds my face. Thank you.
the great Nico Case, that song called Oracle of the Maritimes. Nico said of that song in a 2018 performance in Vancouver that more songs need to be written about New Brunswick. Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. Halifax. I've scoured the historical weather reports with a layman's eye, and what I can glean from that is this. Beginning Sunday, June 16th, 2013, at around midnight, roughly when the dock went missing, the temperature never dipped below 9.1 degrees Celsius. And that remained true through to when the dock was recovered on June 20th. Well, the high topped out at 25.2 degrees Celsius for that period. The temperature rested more comfortably in the late teens or low 20s. There doesn't appear to be any data from nearby stations on the speed of the river's flow, referred to as discharge. Environment Canada's closest station with a publicly available historical record of discharge is all the way up in Grand Falls, New Brunswick. Forgotten the the record button. Here we go. We should be off to the races now.
Okay. So my name is Antonio Sullivan, and I'm a PhD student at the University of New Brunswick.
I was referred to Antone by Alan Curry, a fellow at the Canadian Rivers Institute at UNB, with thanks to Matt Jones and Dave Dunn for pointing me in his direction.
So there actually is a closer station in Fredericton itself, so you could use that. And just in the context of hydrology then, so that guy left on the 15th of June, you say?
The 15th of June, yeah, sometime between that and the early morning hours of the 16th.
Yeah, so, and it's funny enough, he was caught on June 19th, which is actually my birthday, so which is quite funny. But so if you look at the levels then, so low level in the St. John River, so this summer 2020 was actually 1 in 100 year low. It was about 0.8 meters, I think. Don't hold me to that, but I think it was about that. The time frame that Buddy took the raft, the water level was between 3.3 and 2.7 meters in Fredericton. So there's a lot more water there. Spring runoff is still probably in effect there. So in terms of hydrology, yeah, like I'm surprised he only got 13 kilometers in that amount of time.
It would be moving fairly quickly compared to the average then.
For sure, yeah. Like if you compare it to summer lows, so what we went through this summer, there was way more water, like by a significant amount, almost by like 2 to about 2.5 meters more.
So we had sort of talked about maybe like an average rate of, based on what I had for information from the place in Grand Falls, sort of like 402.4 cubic meters per second. Is that helpful at all in determining, you know, maybe how long he might have actually been on the water?
So you can get a velocity measurement. It's very crude. You'll basically take the level. So we have that. So we could take a level, average that for the 3 days he was on, and say you have an average about, I don't know, about 2.8. In depth. And if we go to the gauge station in Fredericton, I'll give you the width of the river, and then we can take that discharge and we can get the velocity. So you'd know how fast he's moving per second, and then you just multiply that by time. But I think really what's happening is, so I read the article he sent on, Buddy was caught with drugs too, right? So I think like we can infer how quickly the water was going, but who's to know how long Buddy was actually on the water. Because it's only 13 clicks, right? So that's not that far.
But I mean, I've been on the river maybe a couple of times in my life and sort of like floating with no mortar. You have to wonder, was he actually on the water for more than, you know, a few hours, maybe even like one day was sort of a day that he was on the river and would have pulled off?
Yeah, like I think you're spot on. So there's an island downstream. I don't know where exactly he was caught, but if you look at... Sorry, I'm just pulling up Google Earth here. I'm going to put on kilometers because I'm going to give you a couple of back of the envelope calculations here, and like with the caveat that they're absolutely flawless. Edit that out.
We won't hold you to too high of a standard here.
Yeah, don't. Okay, so you could, I don't know if this is true, but there's an island there near Lower Lincoln, which is about 14 and a half kilometers downriver, like by the river, not by as the crow flies. Not Euclidean distance, just by the river, but 14 and a half K. So I'm wondering if he got to that island and then just pulled up on the island and hung out for a couple of days, maybe.
Okay, yeah, it certainly makes sense. I mean, he didn't have too much cargo, but you have to figure, again, just with the speed, it's kind of a bit of an anomaly that he wouldn't have gotten further in that time period.
Yeah, and if you, like, so, and he was picked up there towards Oromocto, eh?
That's right, yeah.
There's a massive island in there. And it, like, so it was funny just reading the buddy's article then. Like, I think he definitely got on the island and just had a good old time with doing whatever he was doing, I'd say.
Speaking with Anton refocused my energy on this pursuit as Nova Scotia returned to a relative normalcy and the CKDU studio once again opened its doors. Our conversation also provided the first scientific lens through which to view David Hashey's adventure, distilling new and compelling ideas about his time with the dock. It now seemed most likely, looking at the hydrological data, that Mr. Hashey had completed his entire 13-kilometer journey on that night of the theft, perhaps stopping at the small island Anton mentioned in the early morning hours of June 16th. And while this lent some light to the how of Hashey's adventure, I found myself still stuck on the why. And then, wading back through the organized chaos of email chains and Google Drive folders in February 2021, I found a lifeline. All that and a whole lot more on the next episode of Revisitation. Here's Wolastoqiyik artist, Media. That's Wolastoqiyik artist Media featuring Sisters of the Drum with their song Wolastoq. I asked Media's Dawson Sokobe if we could chat about this Wolastoq-inspired song and the songwriting tradition of the Wolastoqiyik generally.
That song itself came together from Assembly First Nations pretty much, and it was a collaboration between, well, me and, as you said, the Sisters of the Drum. And we wanted, where the AFN came down here to Fredericton, or the Wolastoq, I guess you could say, we wanted to kind of make a song that, I guess, reflected the Wolastoq, because you can hear the water sounds, you can hear the beautiful sounds of the wind and everything on there. And it's actually quite a really funny story on how we actually made the song. The song was made, I guess I kind of made the melody, and Sisters of the Drum just listened to it, and they found a chant that went along with it. And the whole song was created within a day, and it was just magic what happened that day. And I'm forever thankful that that collaboration happened, because it helped me kind of, I guess, experiment more with Indigenous song and music, I guess.
Can you speak at all to how Wolastoqiyik songs were or are passed through generations in the community?
Oh, yes, definitely. My parents always took me to powwows and stuff. They always were teaching me language when I was growing up. They always showed me different artists and stuff that were Indigenous, and they even showed me... hold on a sec, Nicholas, what was that? Color, that thing... Yeah, and I even, when I was younger, I'd listen to Alan Sokovason, who sang, was it Maliseet?
Yeah.
He sang songs in Maliseet, like nursery rhymes and stuff. And so I'd listen to those when I was growing up and stuff. And I going to powwows, songs were always passed down, songs were always shared.
Would you say that the river is a frequent or recurring theme in Wolastoq music?
Yes, it's a very recurring theme. In one of my most recent songs, I think it was my last release, called Carry Me, where I worked on a song with Judy Aquin. Judy Aquin was singing the Wolastoq song, which is, the lyrics are, Wolastoq, carry me, kind of characterizes the Wolastoq as a mother.
Now, did you want to, you mentioned you wanted to talk a bit about the new project that you're working on, which I'd love to hear about.
All right, yeah, it's pretty interesting as well, too. You said you've heard a lot of people characterizing the Wolastoq as a motherly figure. This next one I've been working on, oh my goodness, it's been just nonstop work on it and script writing for it and everything. It's going to be a story-driven, I guess, electronic album, and it's going to be titled Mother of the Water, which is going to tell the story of a young child who... is kind of in midst of a, I guess, abusive household, not really, it might not be like a neglective household, let's say, and he goes down to the water to kind of skip stones and stuff to throw away his anger, and then he finds this being that lives in the water that's sort of this motherly figure to him, to teach him kind of how to get over these fears and how to get over these problems that he's currently dealing with and stuff.
Okay, that's amazing. Sort of where are you at with the project? Is it sort of something that's nearly finished, or are you just sort of starting it now?
I've been working on it since about early 2020, but I guess you could say it's about half done. I just feel I need more time with it, so it'll probably be later this year or even next year till it actually gets published.
Look for Media's Mother of the Water project, hopefully later this year, at m3d14.bandcamp.com. This has been Revisitation. In today's episode, you heard music from Brent Mason, Nico Case, Media, Cedric Noel, Sam Arnold, and Brookside Mall. All of that music is tied to our story's setting, the Wolastoq River, often called by its settler name, the St. John. Revisitation was written and produced by me, Brendan McGee, with editing help from Dylan Ward, and thanks to Kyle Forbes, whose ancient PC this was made on. You can find full episodes, more info about the podcast, as well as links to stream and purchase these songs at revisitationpodcast.wordpress.com.